Here are the WGXC headlines for Monday, February 27th. Over 100,000 people filled Mexico City's vast main plaza February 26th to protest President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's electoral law changes and in favor of retaining their current democracy. Iraqi President Abdul Latif Rashid says his country is now at peace, almost 20 years after the U.S. invaded and overthrew dictator Saddam Hussein. People in Dutchess County are reporting more sightings of coyotes lately, the Daily Freeman reports. Locally, it is the calm before the storm, as a major snowstorm is expected to arrive in the area in the early evening. Pittsfield has already instituted a snow emergency on its streets. The storm has dumped lots of snow from California to Michigan so far. And the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once won several awards from the Screen Actors Guild Awards on February 26th, winning for Best Ensemble and Acting Awards for Michelle Yeoh, Ke-Hu Kwan, and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
I'm the Magic Stranger, and we, the radio station, are just beginning our winter transmission pledge drive for 2023. We're getting real close to reaching our goal of having $5,000 a month of sustaining supporters. If you're not a sustaining supporter, please go to wgxc.org/donate and become one. $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. Then we know we've got you in our pocket, because you've got us in your pocket. You know you do. 24/7. We've got the news. We got local conversation. We got crazy music DJs and kids talking about books, all kinds of good stuff for you. So get on the horn at wgxc.org/donate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, February 27th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports in Porcupine Soup that Greene County Republicans backed David Costanzo to run for an open Greene County judge seat at their nominating meeting February 25th in Catskill. Terry Wilhelm is stepping down as Greene County judge January 1st because of a mandated retirement age of 70 for judges in New York. The Republicans picked Costanzo over Catskill attorney Monica Kenny Keff. In an interview, Costanzo stressed his support for gun rights. Costanzo said, quote, "The Second Amendment is a fundamental constitutional right, and the protection of that constitutional right is of the utmost importance to me," unquote. Republicans also backed incumbent Sheriff Peter Kuzminski and County Clerk Marilyn Farrell and endorsed Gerald Buckley and Brianna Lennon for County Coroner. Voting for these posts is in October and November. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Steve Hughes reports in the Times-Union that area residents are questioning Queeman's supervisor George McHugh's ties to one of the biggest businesses in his small town. McHugh's previous job was as general counsel and spokesperson for the Port of Queeman's. McHugh is also an attorney for three surrounding towns, as well as full-time legal counsel for Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple. And McHugh's wife is in charge of coordinating Albany County's economic development efforts. Hugh has also installed a local business owner as planning board chair and then moved his town office to a building that businessman owns. McHugh's adult son works for a port in South Carolina with the same owners as the Port of Queens. Several residents complaining about all these potential conflicts of interest would not speak on the record because they said they feared possible retribution. Sarah Pruse-Kimma would go on the record saying of the trouble speaking out brings, quote, I don't need it, I don't want it, but I'll be damned if I'm going to be quiet, unquote. McHugh himself also refused to comment for the story, instead emailing a statement that had nothing to do with potential conflicts of interest. Read the full story in the Times Union. On January 1st, 2023, the Art Omai Sculpture Park in Ghent started not allowing any dogs in the Sculpture and Architecture Park after 8:30 a.m. This has caused consternation among those who regularly walk with their dogs through the Sculpture Park, and so Art Omai will hold what they are calling a, quote, dog policy public forum, unquote, at the Berenson Center at Art Omai from 6 to 7 p.m. on March 8th. Their social media post on the forum says that attendees can, quote, share your thoughts and contribute to Art Omai's work in making our grounds a safe, clean, and accessible space for all, unquote. But it does not say that the Sculpture Park is considering a change in policy. Anyone who cannot attend the meeting can email feedback to media@artomai.org. The Coxsackie Fire Department posted on social media that the Coxsackie Athens Central School District holds a public hearing on February 27th about the proposal for a property tax exemption for volunteer firefighters and ambulance workers. Recently, Greene County, Rensselaer County, and Catskill all passed tax exemptions for first responders to retain and recruit more to the area. The Coxsackie Athens Central School District public hearing in the Coxsackie Athens High School Library begins at 5:45 p.m. February 27th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, February 27th. 15.8% of the way through the year, we find ourselves with 21 days left until spring. Local early morning temperatures range from 19 degrees in Tannersville to 28 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 34. 24-hour snow totals are in. 2.5 inches fell in Greenville, 2.1 in Saugerties. Yeah, that's the winter we've had so far. We measure tenths of inches just to make it interesting. Well, we get a bump in the boredom coming. But first, today is going to be dry and cold with a high of 37 at 4 p.m. Sunglasses get put away by noon as clouds swell and winds calm this afternoon, making it the most comfortable time to get out and prepare for the coming snow. That's right, the main event begins at 7 p.m. as snow chances begin. 2 inches fall by midnight, 6 inches total for most fall by sunup on Tuesday. Temperatures fall to 26 degrees and snow will continue to fall all day, dropping another 1 to 2 inches by dark. We get a high of 35 degrees at 3 p.m. Overnight, road crews get a chance to get everything cleared out and temperatures drop to 22 degrees. Then, bounce back Wednesday, hitting 43, but bringing some rain in the afternoon. Thursday, still wet, high of 46. Sunset today will be at 5:28 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:30 a.m. Looking way up, we see the magnetosphere is still ringing from a CME arrival yesterday. It sparked auroras as low as Washington State and Pennsylvania. A second one is on the way, which could push them even lower. Stay tuned and watch that KP index. 7 is our local minimum for aurora propagation. X-class flare chances are at 15%. Solar wind speed is currently 595.9 kilometers per second at 16.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently very bad, verging on closed until dark, with okay conditions below 5 megahertz overnight. All of that could be tossed up in the air as the next CME arrives. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 6.6, storm level. The current sunspot number is 120. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate, who say give a hoot, don't pollute, And right now we're talking about the airwaves. You know the garbage that's flying out from the other stations? Keep it real, keep it local, keep it weird. Head on over to WGXE.org, click on donate, and drop some coin on the community.
Reports indicate that the best protection from radioactive fallout is a shelter.
Yet less than 5% of our population has one.
Do you?
Now, from Survival, one of the nation's leading manufacturers, comes an economical combination steel and concrete block, civil defense approved fallout shelter, offering maximum protection from nuclear fallout and falling debris.
FHA approved, you need nothing down. 5 years to pay.
Will you be prepared in case of atomic attack?
Will you and your loved ones be protected from nuclear fallout and falling debris?
For your family's protection from nuclear fallout, see a Survival shelter today.
Thank you. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If we do not defend these basic principles, we invite a world in which might makes right, the strong dominate the weak. That's the world this body was created to end.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the United Nations Security Council on the anniversary of the Ukraine invasion, stressing that Russia's war can't set the new normal. Blinken heads to Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan this week before going to India for the G20 summit, where he will meet with Russian and Chinese leaders. During an interview with CBS's Face the Nation, CIA Director William Burns says the U.S. still hopes to deter Beijing from making a risky bet by sending lethal military aid to Russia.
Well, we're confident that the Chinese leadership is considering the provision of lethal equipment. We also don't see that a final decision has been made yet.
The federal government ordered a temporary halt on shipment of contaminated waste from the train derailment in East Palestine Saturday. States getting the waste, Michigan and Texas, asked the EPA for the pause. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg says their main focus is still folks in the Ohio town.
Our focus is on making sure that residents in this community are taken care of, and making sure that trains get safer in this country.
President Joe Biden's plan for student loan relief reaches a critical moment Tuesday. Oral arguments before a conservative-leaning Supreme Court. It faces legal challenges from Republican-led states and from two student loan borrowers who've already paid their debts. But Biden says millions of other students deserve to get up to $20,000 in relief.
And about 90% of that relief is going to go to people making less than $75,000 a year. Let me be clear. Not a dime will go to those in the top 5% of the income.
Over the weekend, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis hosted donors in Palm Beach, not far from former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. Several of those in attendance have been major Trump backers, but DeSantis sounds like a candidate.
Florida is leading the nation. We are number one in these United States in net in-migration. We are the nation's fastest growing state.
DeSantis hasn't officially announced a presidential bid yet, but Democrats there are already taking aim. They elected former Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried to be their state chair after a weak election in what had been a blue year in other places. Fried says she will work to unite Democrats in Florida and deny the presidency to DeSantis should he run.
Breaking huge glass ceilings as your first elected female commissioner, and tackling some of the greatest challenges of our time.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. February 21st, the U.S. Supreme Court took another chop at the 1965 Voting Rights Act by refusing to hear a 2001 Mississippi gerrymandering case called Buck v. Reeves. The Reeves case goes back over 20 years when a federal panel rejected racially gerrymandered maps drawn after the 2000 U.S. Census. Democracy Docket reports that the court ordered the state of Mississippi to create a map with one of its four congressional districts a majority-minority district to reflect its 36% black population. It further ordered the state to pre-clear future maps with the U.S. Justice Department, a penalty for states with a history of voter suppression. In the two decades since, Mississippi's black and Hispanic population has grown to over 41% of the population, entitling it to more representation. In 2011, a court-drawn map was ordered until Mississippi could draw fair ones. But in 2021, state Republicans successfully argued the 2011 order was no longer valid, and a more conservative court vacated it. Democrats appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, citing a violation of Article 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case. The decision allows a map which packs black voters into one district, keeping adjoining districts more white. And 2018's Shelby v. Holder decision released Mississippi from having to clear its future gerrymandering with the federal government. We have more details at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
we have been driving somewhere, specifically Gainesville, Florida, with the Vulgar Boatmen, a band from that city. Now we're going to head down one particular street in Gainesville, Route 441, and hear two other songs from Gainesville bands that mention Route 441 in particular. First Tom Petty, then the Silos, and the Tom Petty song has always been rumored to be about a suicide in Gainesville, although Tom Petty has denied that.
The stars are shining brighter than the night that I remember. My thoughts are like a river, reflecting in all directions. I'm gonna afford her, but not today. I'm gonna ride her, but not today. Down, appearing one in the rain.
I'm gonna board her, but not today. I'm gonna ride her, but not today. I'm over you, I'm over you. Miles of country road, rise, rise away. The cars are by the river, clouds are in the
we have to remind our listeners this is a pledge drive week. Yes. And so it is your support that keeps WGXE on the air. Yes. And so the pledge drive, we need monthly sustaining supporters. Sustaining supporters, that's what keeps the radio going. It's not that anybody is making a fortune. Nobody is being rich here. No. But it's there are bills to be paid. You know, that's a community radio. So nobody, we are volunteers. But at the same time, in addition to playing our part in our community, WGXE is playing its part by giving the community a voice. It's a unique open door to diversity, creative voices. Where else can you get local headlines and school closing, participating in on-air dialogue with your neighbors about an important issue? Hear radio artists sculpt with the airwaves, listening to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Live. So we really stretching it when we require as a community radio and as a community where everybody has a voice. And the voice, you don't need to be a professional. I started here as a novice. I didn't know anything about moving on the keyboard or on the anything. But for the past over 10 years now. This is February. We're already over 10 years. you know?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do, but we didn't do it all alone. You know, we were guided. They hold our hands, especially Tom.
With the master.
With the master. We hold, even during the pandemic.
Oh, there is another guy who was working at the tall...
David? Group. I don't know. David? I don't remember his name. You know, it's been so long.
He was the
technician.
Oh, my God.
So he taught us all that we need to know. And then all the people who come and go, those we work with and those who are still around. So we give thanks to all of you who support the station from the beginning and to up to now, especially right now during the pandemic when everybody was on lockdown. I didn't know how we were going to proceed, how we're going to move. But, you know, with every adversity, there's always a way. And Tom will find that way. And then help all the programmers to do what they do most and what they do best.
He knows radio.
And so that's what I'm saying, radio makers. We are not only on air hosts, we become radio makers. Isn't that something? But anyway, really? I give thanks to all of you, community radio programmers, the community technicians, radio technicians, those who are fight on the they are on the front line trying to get the money to support the radio. And so every one of you who can donate whatever that you can donate to keep the radio on, you are helping your community. You are helping everyone maintaining and keeping their voice, because you know. How will you think? Do you think that we will need a lot of money to do what we're doing if we were to do it ourselves? You know?
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So he had someone out there, someone did it and give us a chance, and now we're asking everybody to come. Be a sustaining supporter. We ask you to commit today to help us maintain this independent, participatory and experimental station by contributing monthly.
Yeah, because
an amount of your choosing.
We see the importance of the community too, you know.
Yeah.
The community make the radio.
That's what it is.
Make it happen.
And so we are looking to secure new sustaining supporters to contribute toward our ultimate goal of $5,000 in monthly contributions. And so $5,000 is not one person to do. If you are rich, you can say, okay, you're going for this month, you're going to give $5,000. We will be happy to receive your money. But, you know, $5 count too.
By piti pashish.
I told you that many times. By piti pashish. That means if you give small, that doesn't mean you are stingy. Yeah. You give what you can to support your community. So, that goal is within our grasp now. If we add a minimum of $1,250 in monthly donations during this drive, that will help us get to $5,000 a month. And as I've said, it's not to pay the programmers or not to make money or anything. It's to cover the basic cost of making radio.
Keep the antenna.
Yes, you know, it's just to keep going, you know.
Problem.
And another thing is just 25 cents a day. 25 cents a day. That's mean that you spend more than 25 cents a day. Even some people just spend more than $1 a day and all the other activities. I'm sure that when you play a lottery ticket, $5, you wish to get more. But if you make $1, you will give the station $1. It's just like you make sure that there will be a station in return. That will be a station, a community radio available to you and to your community. So you can sit down and relax and enjoy community radio. And so I implore you to keep that in mind. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter. Or if you prefer, make one-time gift. You are welcome. You can give the $5,000 we need, or you can give us $5 a month, or you can give us whatever. All you have to do is go to the stage, to the website, click on donate, and then you select the amount of your choosing, the amount that you are comfortable with, that even if you have to give, because there are so many organizations out there who depend on donations from local communities. But we know that we may not be the only one who's being or relying on you for your support.
Too.
Yeah, but if you can give a comfortable amount that will not interfere with other donations that you give or the organization you support, please do so. We don't ask a lot from you, but you decide if you give to church, if you give to other organizations in the community you'd like to support that are close to your heart, just like WGXC. Please give what you can on a monthly basis to keep WGXC, just like you like to keep the other organizations running. Add us to your community expense because we need your support.
So you're going to hear from Robert and Johanna Titus, the geologist and biologist couple who write The Catskill Geologist, which you can read every week at thecatskillgeologist.com. They've written books together. They're working on a new book, speaking of pictures at an exhibition, about the Hudson River School of Art and all of the landscapes that were painted. They're doing the field work. They're going to all these places in which painters painted and the things they looked at. And they're describing the geology and biology and plant life and mountains around these. I heard a talk a couple weeks ago at the Carey Institute in which they showed some slides and talked about the research they've done for the book. It's pretty fascinating. The book comes out next year. I'll make sure to talk more about it when it does. But to begin, I asked Robert and Johanna where it all began, where this interest came from. And you're going to hear first from Johanna, and let's get right to it. Here are the Catskill Zone, Robert and Johanna Titus.
Just let me tell you this to begin with. Our fascination with the Ice Age in glaciers comes about because a short distance from where we live, there is another town, and it's in Bergen County in New Jersey.
Where we grew up,
and it's called Glen Rock. Mm-hmm. And if you just Google Glen Rock, New Jersey, you will find out that the major feature there is this giant glacial erratic in the middle of the main street. Mm-hmm. So it separates north and south of the main street.
It's just east of the intersection.
Yep. So we grew up with that.
Mm-hmm. And
it was from a glacier.
Can you explain what a glacial erratic is or what it looks like?
It could be a pebble all the way up to something the size of a railroad car that has been carried for some distance by a glacier. And then as the glacier melted, it dropped out of that glacier.
You've probably been to Sunset Rock north of North Lake or Boulder Rock south of the old mountain house
site.
Those
are glacial erratics.
Those are two very good glacial erratics.
How large is the one in Glen Rock?
It's
size
large.
Of a garage.
Yeah.
It's probably 20 feet tall and 30 feet from one end to the other. Yeah. It's got a monument to the World War II veterans on it and a flagpole in front of it. And my paper route went past it every day.
Well, so how long did it take both of you to figure out that that was more than just a rock or that it didn't just grow as a rock right in that spot?
We just always somehow
yeah,
knew.
We always, I mean,
yes, we've, Johanna and I have both been scientists since we were early grammar school. We both had the calling when we were 6, 7 years old. And so we picked up knowledge of that sort so long ago, and it's almost as if we just were born knowing it. And I'm not being facetious. As scientists, we go back that far. I can remember finding my first fossil when I was 6 years old. And you remember exploring Goffle Brook Park.
Yeah,
the local brook through the local park fascinated Johanna with its biology. So we are born and bred scientists through and through. We encourage that in young people today.
Yeah.
Well, and I can see, I mean, your passion is clear. And I think it's a little bit like intoxicating when I hear you talk about your subjects. You're both very, very much natural teachers. And it made me think, I was thinking this morning about how scientists, one of the gifts, especially teaching scientists have, is this real passion for the subject that can bring a student in. And I still remember, I was not a great college student, but I still remember my geology, intro to geology course at the University of Minnesota. That was one of the few courses that I went to every week. I really enjoyed, there were field trips, but I was also, because I had no background in it, it was a core science course I had to take. It was one of these courses in college that really stuck with me. Anyway, you two clearly have that natural gift.
What you just said doesn't surprise either one of us. It's a very free science. Geology is an intuitive science. You can, if you know the world around you, you can apply what you've learned in that class almost every day. And of course, with our columns, that's our strategy. We want to give people trained eyes. We want them to see the Catskill Mountains, the Hudson Valley, as it was in the geological past, and as it was, and they never knew that. It's so important for people to know that when they see a boulder, it probably was brought to where you see it by the glacier. And what a revelation that is, and what a wonderful thing it is to know that. And if you have children, to explain it to them, if you have grandchildren, to explain it to them. None of the other sciences, and we love all of the sciences, but none of the other sciences are quite as intuitive as is geology. Maybe biology is a close second.
Depends on what you're talking about. Biology is a big field.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, and to, just to give people an idea that I'm not, I guess, what you would call strictly a biologist. I minored in environmental science in at the beginnings of environmental science that long ago. And so I also took geology. I took environmental geology and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's not like I don't know what he's talking about and he doesn't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, and him being a paleontologist, he knows some biology also. So. And what we don't know, we fill in for each other.
Right. Yeah, we work to get very well together in that score. Johanna is one of the best book researchers I've ever met in my life. I'm a wonderful field geologist. You see how that works. She can search the literature and tell me about things that I found out in the woods. And it rounds it out so very nicely. And it makes for a good newspaper call.
I'm so glad you brought up the idea of all of us regular non-scientists being able to kind of notice landscapes or at least define them in a better way when we're walking through them. I'm curious if, so WGXC is the studio that I work in is in ACRA. I'm in Caro. My in-laws are in Perling. And I'm just curious whether there's any obvious landscapes that I'm walking by and not understanding exactly what they are.
By Bavarian Manor?
Yes. When you go downhill, let's suppose you're on Route 32 near Perling. Off to the east, frequently you'll see broad, very flat landscapes where Route 23 crosses 32. If you look to the east, the landscape is very flat, a little bit marshy. That is the bottom of a glacial lake. That flat surface is literally the bottom of a glacial lake. Stand there and look up about 60 feet into the air at noon when the sun is shining down. And in your mind's eye, in your imagination, you can see the wind blowing ripples across the water above you, the sunshine shining through those ripples. What a marvelous thing it is. That is a flat landscape. It should be dull. It should be boring. It should be absolutely uninteresting until you realize that your 2 feet are standing at the bottom of a lake. Isn't that wonderful?
How long ago did that lake go away?
Go away.
Mm. Oh, glug, glug, glug. About 13,000 years ago. It drained, yeah. Mm.
glug, glug, glug.
A little less give a take.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Andrea Mickle reports for Porcupine Soup that the Bank of Greene County announced on February 23rd a commitment for up to $5 million in low-interest loans for business investments on Cairo's Main Street. Several new businesses have opened there recently. Bank of Greene County President and CEO Don Gibson said, and I quote, "We have designed a unique loan program to keep the momentum moving forward. The program will support existing and new business entrepreneurs, which we believe will spur more investments," end quote. There are not too many locations for businesses to move into on Main Street, and Cairo is already working on infrastructure expansion aimed at bringing manufacturing and distribution companies across from the McDonald's on State Route 23. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the newspaper obtained 10 video recordings showing recent fights between students at Hudson schools. All but one are from the junior high school, which shares a campus with the high school, which is a location of the other recordings. The Times Union did not publish the video because they contain minors. Last week, a student threatened a school shooting on the campus. One parent told the newspaper, and I quote, "The teachers are afraid. The students are afraid. It is a volatile environment where no learning can go on," end quote. The fights have been going on with a Hudson Police Department officer on campus. One parent blamed the COVID-19 pandemic for so much violence on campus. The parent said, and I quote, "The primary issue is kids readjusting to normal society after learning during COVID that it's okay to say whatever one wants as a keyboard warrior," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. The Columbia County Democratic Committee announced on social media that on February 23rd that they backed Chris Liberati Conant to run for district attorney. Liberati Conant is currently an assistant solicitor general for New York State's Office of Attorney General. He said, and I quote, "I'm running for district attorney because every person in Columbia County deserves to know that justice will be done, no matter if they're red or blue, black or white, or rich or poor. The people of Columbia County deserve a professional, apolitical prosecutor that will do what is right, not what is politically advantageous." Longtime Columbia County District Attorney Paul Chyka, a Republican, is not running for re-election this year, giving Democrats hope that they could win the seat. Chyka and Columbia County Republicans have endorsed current Assistant DA Ryan Carty to run for district attorney. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grand. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Monday, February 27th. We begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobil in Palenville has gas at $3.39 a gallon, the lowest in the county according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is a 41. That's on the low side for Monday. The UV index Monday is a 3. That's considered moderate but sort of high for the winter months. The water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is just above 38 degrees. On February 27th, over the last 10 years, it's averaged just above 36 degrees, so it's about 2 degrees above normal on this date. National Weather Service in Albany says that there will be increasing clouds throughout the day on Monday as the storm approaches, with a high of 33 and a northwest wind 18 to 13 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Then the snow arrives mainly around 8 p.m., and it could be heavy at times, with 5 to 9 inches predicted tonight and another 2 to 4 inches on Tuesday. Low around 23 is predicted tonight with a southeast wind 9 to 16 miles per hour. Tuesday, the snow continues and tapers off by 4 p.m., with a high of 32 and a south wind 6 to 10 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour for those windmills. Tuesday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 21 and a northwest wind 6 to 8 miles per hour. Then on Wednesday, there is a 20% chance of rain after 1 p.m., with partly sunny skies and a high of 41, so some melting on Wednesday. Wednesday night could be snow showers and could be rain showers too, with cloudy skies and a low around 33. 40% chance of some sort of precipitation on Wednesday night. Thursday, again, there's a 50% chance of showers with cloudy skies and a high of 45, a low around 24 on Thursday. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.